Hello and welcome to the Local Music Revolution. I am your host, Ogre. You can call me Ogre. Please call me Ogre. Yeah, that's what you're going to do. Thank you for downloading, subscribing, commenting, and all of your support. At current time, I am recording this intro for the very first podcast, and everybody has been extremely, extremely supportive of this project. So, from me to every single one of you, thank you very much. You guys are amazing. Today, we'll be talking to local rock and roll band out of Fresno, California, called Heavyfoot. And in the course of this interview, we will talk about their studio recording of their next album, guest keyboardist. Exclusively here, they decided to mention the name of their new album, which, thank you guys. Very, very honored for you guys to do that. We also talk about Mike Portnoy. We talk about our wives and custom basses. And, of course, we hit on the band, what they're doing, what their goals are, and what we'll see from them, thankfully, in a couple weeks here pretty soon. So, we have a great show for you. And these guys are amazing. And they were really fun to talk to, especially being the first interview that I did. Really put me at ease and made me want to do this even more. Again, I want to thank Heavyfoot, Larry, and Sid. You guys are awesome. Thank you very much for being here. Before we get started, I would like to introduce myself properly, because I have yet to do so. I've been playing music since I was 3 years old. The drums were my first love. Always have been, always will. I've played in local bands for years around the Tulare, the Fresno, Visalia area of California. My last functional band was in 2012, and it was a Viking metal band, similar to Amana Marth. One of my brothers, he wanted to do that kind of thing, and he asked me to play the drums, so I said yes. Sadly, there was only one show under that band, so after that, I decided to build a recording studio and start working on music because I wanted to have it as part of what I was doing. I had relied on a lot of people to do a lot of things, and it just didn't work. So I thought, I can do this myself. So I've been teaching myself guitar slowly. I've also been teaching myself bass and recording and mixing and everything. That brings me to this. This podcast, the idea behind it is very simple. I really enjoy talking about music. I love hearing other people's opinions, and as you'll see, we hit on things that both me and the guys actually got excited and kind of went off on. And it's just really fun to talk to other musicians or other artists because, it's a common ground. You're creating something. It's part of you, and you get to know somebody better in that. So I love to be able to do that. It's awesome because by putting this out and me promoting myself separately, I can help these bands, cross fans and get to people that would have never heard of them and really enjoy them. So it's great. I mean, for this episode, Heavyfoot, I had never heard of Heavyfoot before they were mentioned to me. So it was a great experience, and I really, really dig what the guys are doing. So it's a win for everybody because they gained a new fan in me, and I gained a new band that I really enjoy. Last thing I want to talk about before we get this interview started is the name of this podcast. It's called The Local Music Revolution. Granted, it's not going to be strictly music because I have friends that do film, and I've found some really, really interesting businesses and artists and people with different ideas and different ways of doing things, and I really enjoy that, so I'm going to have that on the show. Predominantly, it is music, though. The reason being is because I believe that a music scene is only as strong as the people who don't talk crap about it and are proactive. A lot of people here in the Central Valley complain that there's not a lot of action for the bands. There's not a lot of things that they can do. So I truly believe if we stop griping about it and actually did something about it and, tried to make action ourselves, things would happen. We need to join together, the bands, the fans, the promoters, the artists, anybody that's going to these shows just needs to band together and do it. I mean, you can have a great show in a backyard. You can have a great show in a basement of a skateboard shop. I've done it. Coughed up black stuff for 3 days, but I've done it, and it was great. that's how I met some of my best friends, is just going in there and doing it, and I wouldn't change it for the world. So that's why I named it the Local Music Revolution, and I really hope you guys enjoy this. Let's start it now, man. Hello, I'm here with Sid and Larry from Heavy Foot. How are you guys doing?
How you doing? Hey, what's going on, man?
Doing great.
So firstly, I want to ask the other two members, can you talk about them for a second?
Well, our guitar player is Tim Collins, a.k.a. TC Collins, and he's been with the Core. The Core band was actually Tres Hombres, and we got together back in 2001. And there's been a couple incarnations of Tres Hombres, but the most recent one was in 2001. And he's been playing for quite some time. And we're a little biased, but we think he's probably one of the, if not one of the, best guitar players around. And then, of course, Chris Lunday does our vocals and rhythm guitars for us. Also, Tim does harmony as well. He does background vocals.
Backup, yeah.
And Chris has been around the music scene for quite a while. His most recent band was Uncle Nasty. And we brought him along about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah. He works at one of my sister, at the sister company that I work at, and he kept inquiring about, what are you guys doing? How are you guys doing? He kept hinting that he wanted to get in our band. And what, Larry, it took like, what, over a year to finally get him, I finally got him over to the house.
I think so. I think it took that long for us to get on the same page and realize it.
Yeah.
We were looking and he was looking.
Okay, so it also says that two of you were together for 20 years?
When I got out of high school, I've been playing for quite some time, and during high school, when I got out, I was actually playing country music. I was in a country band, and we were playing, there was a little circuit up in the mountains. We were doing three gigs out of the month, so we were pretty busy, but I was getting burned out. I was kind of done with it, plus I was under 21, so that was just, they were getting a little bit nervous about it, and that was fine with me. So
yeah,
I actually answered a ad in the Fresno Bee for Musicians Wanted, and I met Sid.
Yeah,
really? And that's the way the history goes.
Well, it was my heavy metal band back in the 80s, Stillgrave.
Oh, heavy
and,
metal, nice.
Yeah, that's when we were, me and Jerry, the founders, we were learning how to play our instruments and putting stuff together, and Larry happened to come along, and he was the drummer, so I've known Larry for a long, long time, and I worked with Tim at a place in Fresno, and we were talking about getting the band together, and that's when he was talking about Tres Hombres. We go a little bit even farther back than with Larry.
I've been
playing with Tim for probably about 18 years.
It says that you guys are in the studio right now. Are you wrapping that up? How's that going?
It's going great. I mean, we're fortunate enough to be able to record with Peter Wolf at Wolf Sound Studios, so we're real excited about that. We've been in since January. And as a matter of fact, there is a keyboard player from Poland who was in a band called Boogie Boys. And they've toured basically all over Europe. They're very, very well known over there. They've won a bunch of awards, a bunch of recognition for what they do. And he happened to be in town. And Peter had, we'd kind of thought about maybe adding a couple keyboard tracks here and there. And he asked if we're so interested, because he thought Bartek would be able to come over and lay down a couple tracks. So we went ahead and did that, and it just was, I had kind of high expectations, but I sold it way short.
Total professional.
It was just great working with him. So Long answer to a short question, yes, we are. And we're hoping to wrap it up. We've got the drum tracks down, the guitars, Tim's part's pretty much well done. Sid just finished up, and I believe Chris goes in for some rhythm tracks Saturday. So the way it's looking, we hope to be done by the 1st of April.
Wow, that's actually really good. It's ambitious. That's 4 months in the studio?
More or less, about 3.5. But it's a full, there's 9 tracks, and it's all originals. And the hardest part now is waiting to drop it. We're real proud of it. We've worked real hard on it. There's a couple tracks out there floating around that we've played live. We've gotten some pretty good response, so we're real excited to get it out there.
All right, so Larry, can I ask you a personal question? I'm a drummer, so I have to ask this. How do you prep to record? Because to me, the click track was always intimidating. And it wasn't until I actually sat down and told myself I would learn how to do it that I actually got it. So how do you guys use click tracks? How do you prep to actually go into the studio?
Yeah, Larry.
Thanks, Sid. let's see. We do use click tracks, and we also use a scratch track.
Oh, okay.
And the problem with the scratch track is that when you're playing with the scratch track and you're playing with a click track. And you're trying to follow both of them. When you're laying down a scratch track, that's exactly what it is. It's a scratch track. It's just a basic guide to follow. And it's never 100% on right to the click track, no matter. I mean, that's not anything against anybody. That's just the nature of the beast. So when you're playing, it gets kind of loud, and a lot of times it's easy to lose track of the scratch track, so you got to focus on your click track. Scratch track pretty much will cue you as to where your breaks are, where you're at in the song, where you start, finish, that kind of thing. To be honest with you, what really helped me is I have an electronic drum set.
Yeah, same
and
here.
And I tell you what, if you guys are out there and want to get used to using the click track, there's no better way to do it than practicing with the electronic drum set. It's phenomenal.
I actually bought $1,000 drum set from Guitar Center, the electric drum set. And it has those MIDI songs that you play to.
Yep.
So the way I integrated myself into it was I played the click track while I was grooving along to those tracks.
Yep.
And soon I took it away and I was keeping beat and everything. And then, you know, I transferred that over to guitar so that I could start doing my own scratch tracks. And that's how I learned to defeat my nemesis, really.
Oh, it's a great tool. I had a metronome that I used to plug into my ear when I was playing, and you have to really crank it up. A lot of those things, I mean, the portable ones are not real loud. I mean, you can get the MySpace one that you're going to pay money for, but the benefit to the brains of the electric drums is not only can you use a click track, you can adjust the tempo, but you can also plug in an iPod or a MP3 player, and of course, those guys play along with click tracks as well. So even though you may not, you know, say you want to play with a song, I mean, in a sense, you're playing with a click track because they do that as well. So it's a great tool to use. It's really helped me a lot.
Hey, Larry, what's my iPod?
Well, same person who invented the 8-track tape, I think.
Sid, I'm actually, like I said, I'm a drummer by trade. First love. It's always be a part of me. But I found with recording everything else that the bass is my favorite thing to record. How do you go about writing it? How do you go about recording it, getting your tones, anything like that?
Well, it was kind of funny because I went in the studio and I always think I have a good sound. And Peter has a great music ear. His tone is beautiful. And he was trying to adjust my sound, kind of make me sound higher and get a little bit more power. And I had my bass turned all the way to the low bass instead of up to the high. And man, once he did that, my bass was popping. It sounded great. you know, it's just little things like that. And I get so satisfied in some of the stuff that I do that I'll play it forever until someone tells me, you know, tells me something better. and his advice was great. And I went in there knowing the songs pretty well. And one thing about recording is, like Larry was saying, you know, little things change as far as the tempo, as far as the metronome going. And you kind of listen to all that stuff, and then he tells you little things that you need to do. Why don't you run this, put this in here and stuff. And sometimes just a little bitty thing can really, really screw you up, whereas you just start getting so frustrated, you know.
Yeah, I had no problem with it, Sid. What are you talking about?
But I'm telling you, my section, Saturday, I went in Saturday, and I put down 5 tracks, and it was a little frustrating. And Sunday, I was a little apprehensive, but I went in Sunday, and it was just easy as pie on Sunday. And I'm just totally satisfied with what I've done.
That's actually really good to hear. It's sometimes I've found that I get overly critical of myself in the studio, so it's really nice to hear somebody actually, you know, knows how to do it properly and can make really good sounds come out of it.
You can get frustrated easy, let me tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So where is the studio located? You said it was Wolf Studio?
It's Wolf Sound Studio, and it's right off of the Tower District. It's kind of funny. There's like 3 or 4 or 5 different studios. We recorded at another studio, which isn't very far from there. But this particular studio, the Tower District in this town is pretty much where all the hub is. I mean, a lot of the recording studios are there. A lot of the, obviously the venues are there. Pete is real well known in around, as far as recording studios, he's a connoisseur, and there's a sound that he wants, there's a sound that he expects, and he kind of raises the level, he raises the bar, and he gets the best out of you, and he just knows how to do it. He's been doing it for that long. It's kind of neat because the mixing board that he has actually is one from a Black Sabbath session. And yeah, it's pretty neat. He's got a bunch of different things like that. He's spent a lot of time assembling the equipment that he uses, and to watch him work is just amazing. But he's worked with, he's worked with some big names. He's worked with, one of the members of Supertramp came in. A lot of the local bands. I know Mofo Party Band, John Clifton. He's recording a record with him right now.
Yeah.
So, if any of the musicians, if you drop the name of Peter Holt, they know exactly who he is.
Can you tell me about the song Get Up?
Sid?
Get Up is one that Chris wrote. Chris has written a big majority of the songs, and he's just presented them to the band acoustically. And I think Get Up, Larry, isn't that about telling a girl just to get up and get out?
Pretty much.
I really think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great song.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple songs on the CD that probably need to be heard before they're explained. We all kind of have a wry sense of humor, I guess. But the writing process for us, it's really neat because this is right. Chris usually comes up with a riff, or Tim will come up with a riff. And, I mean, there's been songs created with just a little riff. And we all add our own thing to it. We work on it. Uh-huh. We work really, really well together, which we're real proud of. I mean, there's just a chemistry between all of us when we get together. Everybody adds their own little nuance to it. And fortunately for us, it's resulting in a kind of unique sound. And I think if you listen to the EP that we released, Lift, and then you hear the new CD, which I can announce the name of it too, by the way. We haven't really announced it, so I wanted to use this opportunity in your show to announce that.
Yeah, you did.
The name, that's right, the name of the new CD will be No Waiting on Tomorrow.
Nice.
By Heavyfoot. And that is a song that we're real proud of. Sid, matter of fact, wrote the lyrics of that song.
Yeah, that's the one. That's my one and only.
That's it. And it was so good, we had to name the CD after it. In fact, that's one of the 3 tracks that Bartek helped us out with the keyboards on. But
oh, so that's extra special now.
Absolutely. So, but back to the point, if you listen to the new CD and the other CD, you can kind of there's kind of a sound that we've been able to develop, and like I said, we're pretty proud of it.
All right, this is Get Up by Heavyfoot. Get Up by Heavyfoot. And now I would like to ask you guys, live situation, what's that like for the near future? Do you wait until the end of the studio sessions, or how's that working?
Well, we're kind of doing a little bit of both. We have a big show on April 25th, so everybody come out. We're actually opening up for Gamma. And
David Patterson.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's been the vocalist. And he's doing a show in the tower, and we're fortunate enough to be able to open up for him. So we're really excited about that. In the meantime, we actually have a couple acoustic shows. We do quite a few of those, actually. We've been on a couple local television shows playing acoustic. next, well, actually March 14th and March 15th, we'll be playing at Sierra Vista Mall.
Oh, nice.
And Saturday we'll be on from, I believe, approximately 10 till 5. Until 20 after 5, we'll do a 30-minute set. And then the following Sunday, we'll be there from 20 till 3 till 10 after. I know that's kind of odd
2:40,
time.
2:40, yeah. 2:40 to 3:10, yeah.
But it's a, my understanding is it's a fundraiser benefiting the Ronald McDonald House, so we were more than honored to be able to be a part of that.
That's amazing. Speaking of that, you guys do the fundraising for nonprofit organizations. I believe there's a list here. ACT of Women and Girls, kind of?
ACT actually is an animal compassion team. And
oh,
it's a
really?
No-kill animal shelter. And we're all animal lovers. We all have pets. And they're family to us. So anytime that we can do anything at all to benefit that, we're more than glad to do it. Every year they have a benefit out of the private residence. In fact, they should be, I think due to our schedule, we're not going to be able to do it this year, but they have a dinner and a raffle and all that, and so we usually provide the entertainment. We've done that for about the past, what's it, 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, it's a beautiful event. They go all out, have the auction, really good food. They have a bar, and the last couple of years they've had great entertainment.
Oh,
I would have to
amazing.
Say that. I think that's really evening. But we've done a couple veterans benefits. Like I said, the Ronald McDonald House coming up benefit. If we're all over that. I mean, it's a blessing for us to be able to play, and we're real fortunate. And if there's anything that we can be even remotely a part of to be able to help in any way, we love to do it. It's an honor to do it.
Is there go ahead.
I was going to say, if you want to feed your family by playing music around here, it ain't going to happen. So whenever we play a charity event, it makes us look good, right?
Yeah,
makes us look very good. 29 cents at the food for life.
So is there a specific benefit concert that you guys have done that sticks out in your minds? I mean, it doesn't have to be a huge thing. I mean, just for the four of you guys, was there one that stuck out for you?
You mean as far as being memorable, or
memorable? You know, making a difference in your eyes. Anything really? I mean, just one of the benefit shows that just stuck out with all of you guys.
The benefit shows? I don't know about too many of those that stuck out.
Well, I think we did do a benefit for a bait. They had a motorcycle run that we did for them. I think the one that's probably been the most successful is, I have to go back to ACT. I know that every year it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the amount of money they're able to raise gets more. They have a real nice facility right off of, I believe it's off of Orange and Golden State, and that's where they house all the for lack of a better term, the homeless animals, I guess, for waiting for adoption. To tell you what kind of a class organization that these guys are, they actually found I don't know if it was a Chihuahua or a smaller dog that had lost the use of his back legs.
Oh.
And they actually were able to have a little cart made. So his front legs were perfectly intact, and they were able to teach him how to, they set the back part of his body on this little cart. And you'd never know. I mean, he was the happiest little dog. He'd run around, and his back legs are on wheels, and his front legs are just going to town. And
that's amazing.
I mean, it's just amazing. And they're so, animals are just amazing on how they can adapt to the things that happen.
The worst situations, I know.
Yeah, they're always happy, and they just want to be loved and have attention. And it's like I said, it's just a privilege to be a part of that when we're able to do it.
Yeah, that's truly amazing. I love hearing stories like that. I mean, I have two dogs myself. I have two cats that are at my apartment right now trying to get into the studio. But they just bring so much to the table, and they don't ask you to do anything other than treat them right. So, I mean,
exactly.
It truly is amazing.
Well, as long as I do what I'm told, everything works fine.
Yeah, no kidding, right? All right, so so back to the music. You guys, you said you have the new CD out and everything, 9 tracks. Can you, by chance, list the names of the songs? I mean, maybe give, like, a rundown of what the song means to who wrote it?
As far as who wrote it, I think it was, all of us kind of had a part in it. I know that, you know, No Waiting on Tomorrow, Sid did the lyrics. I think Sid and Chris do a lot of the lyric writing. Yeah. Tim does too, but I think those guys handle the bulk of it, right?
A lot of what happened on this one, the first CD, Chris came to the table with a lot of lyrics that he already had, a lot of chord progressions. And this one we kind of went in the band room and we'd be playing some copies and stuff, and all of a sudden we'd come up with a riff. Tim would come up with some riff over in the corner, and we'd go, wow, that sounds pretty good. And we'd build on that, and then Chris would throw some vocals on top of it and words, and before you know it, we'd record it real quick before we go home so we wouldn't forget it. And that's pretty much how a lot of them developed.
Exactly.
That's really the way most songs should be written. I mean, everybody have a say in it. And do you guys jam? Just go to your band space and just start playing just anything that comes to mind?
Well, that's what we like to do. Unfortunately, it's been business lately. We're preparing for a show, or buckling down and getting things done for going into the recording studio. Right now, our practices are focused around the acoustic shows. If I could add one more, April 18th will be appearing at the Lounge in downtown Clovis, which I believe is in DeChico's, and we'll be doing an hour acoustic set at 7 o'clock. So that will be a week before the Tower show. But as far as the names to the songs on No Waiting on Tomorrow, obviously No Waiting on Tomorrow, Damage is Done. I think that's probably, Damage is Done is probably going to be the, I don't know, it sounds like that's going to be the one that's going to come out first.
That's going to be the commercial song.
There's a song called Lust, Other Side of Me, Slow Woman.
My favorite, Daddy Needs the Hunt. and we can all guess what that one is. Daddy Needs the Hunt, it ain't deer.
Yeah. If you're listening to that title and you're thinking, no, it can't be, yes, it can be, and yes, it is. So,
that's amazing.
No, I was going to say, the one, we did an acoustic song featuring Chris on Lift, and that was The Old Soul, which I think you're going to play here in a little bit. What we did, we love that song, and we decided that we wanted to make an electric version of it. Real bluesy, real soulful. That's also going to be on the record. There's a song also called Can't Get Right, which is another song that...
Total blues,
and that's another one that Bartek lended a keyboard track. And then the other acoustic one that...
Need Your Love.
Need Your Love, that was... That's a funny story on that one. We were real happy. The response we got from Old Soul on Lift was pretty overwhelming. So, and Chris has just an amazing voice. I mean, every time, even I hear it, it's tough to focus on what I'm doing, because sometimes I'll just listen to what he's doing, you know, how he sounds. And so we wanted to have another one to focus on. Well, after we were listening to it, we thought, well, you know, that might sound pretty good with some keyboard tracks to it. So it's not really as electric or plugged in as the other songs, but it's a real nice song. So that turned out really well.
Well, yeah. Speaking of songs, you sent me another one. It's called War Paint. Can you give me the rundown on that?
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, go for it, man. That's a good one.
Well, War Paint is one of the first songs that we wrote as a band, and Chris had the majority of the idea, and we are huge pro-military. I mean, we just were in awe about the sacrifices that our enlisted men and women make for us so that we're able to we're able to go out and do what we all do. Sitting here talking to you, playing music, all that stuff wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for previous sacrifices, current sacrifices, and future sacrifices that these people make for us.
Very true, man.
And what we, it's a little bit of a tribute from us to them, just letting them know how much we appreciate it. I have to tell you, my wife, she will, every time she sees somebody in uniform, she will walk over to them and give them a hug or shake their hand and just tell them thank you. And I have, I'm fortunate enough to have some personal friends who have served. And let me tell you something, if you guys are out there and you see somebody in fatigue or someone who has served, you don't have to hug them. I'll walk up to them and at least let them know, hey, you know what, thanks for what you do. It may not seem very much to you, but to them, it's absolutely huge. And to, yeah, take, I mean, to take a minute to do that, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, they deserve it, there, I mean.
Big deal to you, it takes 2 seconds, but they don't forget stuff like that, and it's heartfelt. I mean, we really mean it. So that's, yeah, that's kind of the basis for Warpaint. Yeah.
If you go to our website right there, you can, that video you did.
There's a video. There's a couple performances. One of them is live, and then one of them is actually a produced video that we kind of put together. So if you get a chance to look at it, it kind of explains the.
It's all about the military.
Absolutely.
I will do that. I mean, they really deserve all our respect. I mean, it takes a special kind of person to be in that kind of element and way of life. I mean, I will be the first person to tell you I would suck at that. I mean, I can't even imagine to do that. So, you know, they have my utmost respect. And on that front, we will play Warpaint right now.
We'll be right back.
That was War Paint. We're still here with Heavy Foot. They have not left yet because I have not scared them away yet, thankfully.
It's more than that.
That's good to know. That really, truly is good to know. All right, so during the break, you guys were talking about a custom bass or a bass present. What's up with that, guys?
Yeah, I just celebrated my birthday.
29.
Well, if you really want to know how old I really am.
No, unbelievable.
Anyway, I'm a big Texas Longhorn fan. I have my house painted by Texas Longhorns. I have the horns. I go to Texas every year. And anyway, I'm just a huge fan. Well, anyway, I play a Fender Precision bass. And we were in the studio the other day, and my birthday was February 24th, and it was probably about 3 weeks before my birthday. The band, Tim and Chris and Larry, they had a custom-made bass, and it's painted Longhorn orange and has the skull with the horns on it. And
it was wonderful.
They gave it to me in the studio because they were like a bunch of little kids. They got it for me. They couldn't wait for my birthday, so they had to give it to me early. But
I hung into that thing for 2 weeks and it's killing me every day. I just wanted to have them.
That is incredible, man. That's so cool of you guys.
It was one of the most unexpected gifts I've ever gotten. It was fantastic.
So it was a custom build or what was that?
It was a guy in Hanford. What was his name, Larry?
Death by Shred Guitars.
Death by Shred.
Guy's name is Chris. And hey, we'll shout out to Chris. If you guys need something done like that, it's because when we first talked about, Chris, I would like to take credit, but Chris is the one that came up with the idea of coming up with a bass that was painted like Texas Longhorns. And I thought, oh, that's a great idea. So we started looking around, and, you know, a lot of the places were out of town, and I happened to kind of make an announcement, hey, there's anybody who knows anybody who does custom paint work on a guitar. And this guy, actually his wife is the one that responded. And they dropped the fact that not only do they do custom paint, they actually build them from the ground up.
Oh, that's great.
Anything that you want. So I said, absolutely. So they did. There's my fan club right there.
Yeah, there you go.
So what they did was, you know, you tell them what you want, and they make, 100% custom from the ground up. It's an amazing bass. He did a great job.
And you know, Andrew, and the thing that even topped it off even more was when I had my birthday party, and I had a bunch of my bands there playing and stuff. And my brother owns a music store in Selma. He came up with the idea. He got me a hard case for it, and had one of our family friends paint the Longhorn logo and hook 'em horns on the actual case too. So it's a complete combination.
Let me guess, you had a huge smile on your face for about 3 weeks after, maybe?
Oh yeah, you can probably see my smile from where you're at right now.
I still smiling.
Hey man, instruments for musicians, that right there it's one of the greatest gifts. My wife, for a wedding present, got me a signature Dimebag Darrell ML.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, it's amazing. And then for Christmas this past year, she got me an ML. It's not a signature. It's just a regular ML. And she's like, you go and you customize it the way you want. This is your custom guitar. I was like, oh, my goodness.
Wow. Okay, the question is, Andrew, though, what'd you get her?
I can't tell you that.
Andrew.
Yeah.
To say that, if you saw Larry's drum set that's in the band room, I mean he has to mark it to be able to take it apart and to reassemble it. But anyway,
well, it sounded like a good idea at the time, but now it's just
for the drummer that has everything. What can you buy him that he doesn't have? So Larry, tell him what your wife bought you.
Uh oh. Oh, this has to be bad or extremely good.
But it had a purpose. It's actually featured in one of the songs, so it was.
Yes, it is.
She actually bought me a gong.
Oh, that's one of the things I don't have.
I have had more comments about that gong than anything else. You don't even have to touch it. You just sit it up there and look at it. And it looks, if it actually makes me look like I know what I'm doing.
Okay, Larry, on that subject, I have to ask you one question, Larry.
Yes, sir.
What kind of symbols do you use?
I am a Sabian person.
There you go. You've just become my new best friend.
I'll see. Is there another symbol? I'm not aware of them.
No. I've honestly, for the last 10 years, I've used the B8 series and the XS series. I mean, I'm kind of poor here, but...
let me tell you something. They came out... Don't a little sidetrack here. I know drummers... Guitar players will say, hurry up, but drummers will appreciate that.
Go ahead.
What Sabian has done is they've taken, and it's killing me because I can't remember the name of the series, but if you look it up, you can find it. What Sabian is doing is they're taking symbols that they've given to artists, the double A's, double AX's, their top-of-the-line symbols. When they get them back, they are retooling them and reforming them.
Ooh.
And they've turned around and they're reselling them.
Oh, that...
And they're under a specific line, and they're no more expensive than a B8 or a B8 Pro.
If you have an angry woman at your doorstep, that's my wife, and you just screwed it all up, man.
And my name is Sid, so if there's anything... No, just tell her. Say, now look, honey, this is how much this would have been if it was a double AS, but look how much I see. It's all in presentation, Andrew.
Yeah.
I know, but she bought me bass traps 1 year for my studio. I mean, they're $44 a piece. This woman is incredible. Like, she actually told me to stop being a bitch about it and to build a studio.
Hey, like, you know what? I think you have a keeper on your hands.
Oh,
that's it.
That is why I married her. I'm not going to lie. She keeps me in check, and she'll tell me if I'm just coasting in my music. She is a very, very big keeper. I love her to death.
You know what's so funny you say that, Andrew? We'll do a song. We'll have an idea. Usually what will happen is if we have an idea, we'll start to kind of develop it. We'll usually lay down. Sid has a four-track recorder in the practice room. So we'll make sure that we don't forget, because there's always an idea that we're coming up with. So we have, even though we're done with the CD, we probably have enough material for at least two more CDs that we haven't even developed yet. But what will happen is we'll record it, we'll burn it to CD, and then I'll bring it home. And the first thing I hear is, did Sherry like it? Did Sherry like it? What did you think of that? Did Sherry like it? So then I have to call and give them the review of how it went. Well, and God love her. She's honest. I mean, she holds nothing back. If it sounds good, she'll tell you. If it doesn't sound good, unfortunately, she'll tell you that too.
You really need that as a musician. I mean, you can get full of yourself and just want that to sound good. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. And I've slowly been learning that, thanks to my wife.
No, you're right. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I was going to say, so many times, all musicians think that their originals sound great. And then all of a sudden you start playing for people, and sometimes it really surprises you that you don't get the response that you thought you were going to get.
Yeah.
And it's always nice when someone will finally, you know, when someone does give you the truth, hey, you need... more drums here, you need, you know, a keyboard might be good here.
Right.
And they give you, and some of these people, they give you some really, really good feedback that you didn't even think of.
It's amazing to have that, especially when you're so close to it, you have to walk away. And just having fresh eyes, I mean, I don't know if you guys work alone when you're writing your riffs to bring into the studio or the practice space. But for me, I work alone on my music, and it gets lonely, it gets tiresome, frustrating, and it's really good to have that person to go, okay, this is what you need to do, you need to take a step back, maybe, you know, just give an alternative opinion.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to deal with Peter, because we knew Peter has a reputation, and we knew exactly what we were going to get when we went into the studio. But just like you alluded to, that's exactly what we wanted. I mean, yeah, you know, you appreciate the positive feedback, and you know, you hope it's legitimate, and a lot of time it is, and I'm not trying to take away from that. But when you have someone who really doesn't have a vested interest in what you're doing, and can really look at you and say, hey, that works, but that doesn't, that's huge. It just makes you better. If you can, you have to be in a frame of mind to accept it. And if you can accept it and take it for what it is and know that it's, you know, you'll benefit from it, then it's a huge tool to make you a better band, a better musician, a better artist, a better writer.
Yeah, it helps so very much.
Yep. You can't get all butthurt over it, or else you got no business doing it.
Yeah, you have to have that criticism to get better. I mean, nobody ever got better by being told they're great. They just start coasting. I mean,
I have.
Oh, well, good for you, sir. That's amazing.
Well, I'm amazed every day working with Ted. I can tell you that.
It's those little things. It's those tiny things you can do on a phrase that make the songs great, man.
Uh-huh. Oh, it is. It's we'll finish something, and even at the last minute, Tim will say, "Hey, why don't we?" I've been working on it. Between the times that we're in practice, we'll write the song. We'll come back to it a couple of days, a week later, and Tim will say, "Hey,
Tim is notorious for saying, I've been thinking." And the minute he says, I've been thinking, we all kind of like put up our antenna. But the man comes up with some very, very good ideas.
He absolutely does.
He has good chords. He has good rhythms. He has harmonies for the songs. You know, he's a big part of our band, a very big part of our band.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's always good to have in your bands. I mean, the person that works tirelessly, you know. But also, I mean, do you guys divvy out everything that you guys need to do? I mean, I know a few bands that do guerrilla promotion goes to one guy, online promotion, managing shows, things like that. How do you guys work on that?
How do we do that, Larry?
Well, it's funny you ask. Actually, I kind of end up doing all of it. The shows, we all kind of... Chris knows a lot of people. Sid knows a lot of people. We all know a lot of people and been involved in it for so long. As far as the social pages and stuff, I'm the one that does all of it. When you're getting a response from Heavyfoot, when you're posting on Heavyfoot, when you get a response from Heavyfoot, that's basically me. And a lot of that, it's just, unfortunately or fortunately, I have a little more computer experience than the rest of them do, but...
I would still have 8-tracks if they were available.
Yeah, usually if I get a call from 9 o'clock at night from Sid, I know exactly what the problem is. It's either there's a button that he shouldn't have pushed, there's a warning screen that's come up, you know, there's something that's like that that's been going on.
I'll tell you this much, man, Larry, I completely understand where you're coming from. The bands I was in, I was doing all the promotion, everything like that. It wasn't until one of my last few bands that I stepped back and told them to do all of it, and we only played one show. I mean...
Well, it's the drummer.
Yeah, the drummers are the unsung heroes.
It's the drummer.
Yeah, nobody understands that, but I mean, there's countless... Like Mike Portnoy of Dream Theater, that guy...
That's exactly right.
It surprised me, to be completely honest, that they've lasted without him. I mean, it's great to see, but it surprised me to no end.
Well, Mangini is a machine. I mean, a human being shouldn't be able to play like Mike Mangini does. One of my big influences is Mike Portnoy. I've been a huge Dream Theater fan. I've seen him, I don't know how many times. I've had the pleasure of being able to meet him. I was able to meet John Petrucci. I've met him backstage, but I got to see him one-on-one. I went to NAMM back in January, so I got to meet him. But it's really funny that you say that, because there was a lot of projects that Portnoy was involved in. He did kind of a bootleg CD line and video line that he would sell with the band. It was all approved with the band, but they would, you know, sell things like that. He was real interactive with the fan clubs. There's a fan club that he would provide them with interviews, special little things here and there. And now that he's gone, a lot of that is gone as well. So you really know exactly how critical his role was with the PR of the band. I like Portnoy. I mean, I'm sorry, I like Mangini, but I just, you know, there's a part of me that always hopes someday there's going to be that announcement that Portnoy's going to go back. You know, I just
I truly hope. I mean, I know it's one of their famous songs, but Pull Me Under, that Tom intro, oh my goodness, man.
Oh, that's where I launched them. That's the one that got all the radio play, and they have such a cult, they have a cult audience, and when you go see them, they play the Warfield up in San Francisco normally when they come on tour, and they do an evening with, and it's 3 hours. Each and every one of those musicians can carry their own. They're just unbelievable. And they'll do a 3-hour show, and you're exhausted by the time you're done watching them because it's so intricate. They're a musician's band. Because if you play, you can appreciate what they're doing. Not to say that the regular passive listener appreciates it, but you really, if you're playing it, if you're a guitar player, a bass player, a keyboard player, no matter what, you can really appreciate the idiosyncrasies that they're doing, the riffs, the time signatures that they're throwing in there, they'll come in, they'll count down, then they'll go back out and they'll count out. I mean, you can hear a song 50 times and still not figure it out. They're just incredible.
One of the pivotal moments in my playing was seeing a DVD where Mike Portnoy explained the quad fills that he does. The two on the hands, two on the feet, or the four on the hands, four on the feet. It wasn't until then that I actually learned how to, you know, use the toms properly. And I think that was like 4 or 5 years into me playing the drums. It was that man is incredible. And I saw him with Dream Theater in 2005 in Fresno, actually, for the first Gigantour. With
that was Megadeth. The Gigantour when they played with Megadeth, yeah.
Yes, I saw them there. And then I saw him with Avenged Sevenfold in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, man, him with the heavier stuff, it seems like it suits him very, very well.
Well, he does a lot of. He's always done side projects. He's done. Right now, he's playing with Neil Morse. He's also playing with the Winery Dogs with Billy Sheehan on bass and Richie Kotzen on guitar and lead vocals. I think they're just coming out with a new CD. They did a Led Zeppelin tribute. Yellow Matter Custer or Custard Matter. I'm sure I butchered that.
Is
he also
the
did Liquid Tension Experiment. He did a couple CDs with Petrucci in that one. It's just the sad part about it is, though, Andrew, is that, you know, these guys, John Mayer Young, the bass player, Petrucci, and Portnoy, you know, they went to music school together.
Yeah.
They were as tight as you could be. And, you know, Charlie Domenici was the original vocalist until James LaBrie came on. And they went through a couple keyboard players until they finally settled on, I knew I'd forget one
His
of them.
His name's
anyway,
Jordan something. Rodas?
Jordan Rodas, thank you.
Yeah.
But that friendship is the saddest part of this whole thing, is they decided to go on. I can understand why he wanted to break, but I can talk about this all day long, so I'll have to stop.
Hey, man, I understand. When you're in a band, it's a marriage. If it's not right, then you split.
And the sad part is
it destroys people.
I'll never forget. They were interviewing Van Halen one time, and of course, you know the deals with David Lee Roth and all those guys. And
yeah.
I remember one of them. I can't remember if it was Eddie Van Halen or David Lee Roth. They said they were on tour so much, they were around each other so much. It got to the point where one of them looked at the other and they said, "Do you really have to breathe?" I mean, when it gets to that point, you know that there's a problem.
All right.
I think that goes on no matter what level the band is. It's just so much more when you're touring with people and you're on the bus, you're on the plane, you're at the hotel room, you're just with them all the time. And
yeah,
you know,
we go
through a little of that just ourselves, just in the little things we do, huh, Barry?
Absolutely.
Just,
you have
you're getting irritated at certain things and stuff.
Well, you have four strong personalities. I mean, you have that's the kind of personality you have to play. You have to have some amount of self confidence, and sometimes there's a borderline of and I'm guilty of it. I'm not going to lie. I mean, there's times that I'm sure I annoy. I'm sure I don't annoy Sid, but I'm sure I annoy the other people.
Uh-huh.
But no, it's just that's just part of it, and you kind of you learn to deal with it, and it's. But the payback, the end result and the payback is worth it. You know?
Well, I've always told everybody, one of the most difficult things that you could ever do is sit four people down in a room and tell them to create something.
That was the wise person who told you that, because they're exactly right.
No, it's from personal experience. I mean, we could be jamming and everything, and it can turn into a bloodbath because everybody wants their part. And everybody has that kind of scenario. I mean, it's just four personalities. Sometimes things just don't work properly. I've had bands crumble because people didn't want to do a certain part in the song. It's petty sometimes. But I said, man, it's just such a very, very intimate thing that
I think the benefit for the core, and I say core, the me, Tim, and Sid, is that we've been together since 2001. And even before that, you know, Tim and Sid played together on a more consistent basis. Sid and I had lost touch for quite a number of years before we got back together again. And you play with someone for so long. I mean, I can look at Sid, Sid can look at me, and I know exactly what he's going to do. I know when he's going to do it. He looks at me, he knows what I'm going to do and when I'm going to do it. And when you get to that point, when there's that unspoken communication that you have, that's a huge plus. I mean, I feel more comfortable playing with Sid and actually the other guys in the entire band than I've had. I play with a bunch of different bands, and I feel at home, comfortable, just at ease playing with these guys than anybody else.
Wow, Larry. Did you record that, Andrew?
I did actually. I was just gonna ask if it was True Love.
I remember when you got a custom bass for your 49th birthday.
Yeah, you're right.
And that was part one of Heavyfoot. I am cutting the interview here because the original was an hour and 47 minutes long with everything. And that is really long and too big of a file to upload onto my Bandcamp. So I am cutting this into two parts. And that is awesome because Heavyfoot has two podcasts under their belt. At least under my local Music Revolution now. Good job, guys. You didn't even have to try that hard. Awesome. Congratulations. Part two is being uploaded with this interview as the inaugural series for the local Music Revolution. Download part two of this episode and all of the other episodes that I have released so far. You can do that and keep up with me by commenting, rating, subscribing, and adding the Local Music Revolution at thelocalmusicrevolution.bandcamp.com, facebook.com/thelocalmusicrevolution, and if you want to be booked on the show because you have a great skill, such as drums, or painting, or drawing, or making people act in a certain way, you can contact me at thelocalmusicrevolution@gmail.com. We can work on getting you onto the show. Remember that I do answer all of the comments, the emails, and the messages. Thank you, everyone, for your support in this great, amazing, really fun endeavor that I've taken. Until next time, I am Ogre. This is the Local Music Revolution. Be good, everyone.